Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
We've got a great show lined up for you.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Hello. Welcome to the Patrick Madrid Show. Thank you for listening. My number is 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. Cyrus, I have a feeling that the people I'm about to talk about will have a field day with my radio program.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. Here's why. Because there is now software that analyzes snippets of your speech to identify mental health problems, and it's being rolled out into places like call centers, medical clinics, telehealth platforms. And this is from Axios. We'll get a link posted. You'll get a link posted to this, I should say, Cyrus. The idea is to detect illnesses that might otherwise go untreated. Proponents of voice biomarker technology say that the underlying artificial intelligence is good enough to recognize if you're depressed or if you're anxious, or if you have one or more of a host of other maladies. But it's growing ubiquity. That's such a great word. It raises privacy concerns similar to those brought about by facial recognition. Hospitals and insurance companies are installing voice biomarker software for inbound and outbound calls so that with your explicit permission, they can identify in real time if you're chatting, if they're chatting with you, whether or not you might be anxious or depressed, and then they can refer you for help. The technology is also making inroads into doctors' offices, clinical trials, and senior centers to identify problems on the spot and monitor patients remotely. Employers are now looking to use voice biomarkers on their employee helplines. Companies that sell the technology, and it gives a long list of them, none of which I've ever heard of, but chances are they'll be bought by Google or Facebook in due time, or Amazon. They are showing a great deal of efficacy in this science. So one app, for example, it's designed for personal use, Sond Mental Fitness. It encourages you to keep a daily voice journal so that artificial intelligence can detect stress and other changes. A scant but growing number of scientific studies support claims that voice biomarkers can help screen for everything from depression to cardiovascular problems to respiratory ailments like COVID-19. Remember COVID-19, Cyrus? Remember that when that happened? And it was like a...
I'm just thinking next time I call into some organization and there's always that message, this phone call is being recorded for
quality assurance.
Now that's going to just get longer. And it's like, this is being recorded so we can tell if just exactly how you're feeling.
You know, that's exactly right. They could also tell, I should think, if they could tell if you're stressed out, they could say, well, let's tweak the software to see if he's lying. That's a possibility, mm-hmm. I should think. Now, here's an example. Depressed patients take more pauses and stop more often, according to Maria Española. She's a psychologist and an assistant professor at the University of Cincinnati College of Medicine. She said people who are depressed, their speech is generally more monotone, flatter, and softer. They also have a reduced pitch range and a lower volume. Unlike Siri, now this is the article again, unlike Siri and Alexa, vocal biomarker systems analyze how you talk, prosody, intonation, pitch, etc. Not what you say, but how it's said. So your voice sample is run through a machine learning model that uses a capacious, that's another great word, a capacious database of anonymized voices for comparison. So what they found is from as little as 20 seconds of freeform speech from you, they are able to detect with 80% accuracy if you're struggling with depression or anxiety. So that's why I say they'd have a field day with this radio program. When I think about the thousands, probably by now, tens or scores of thousands of hours of my speech that's floating around out there on the interwebs,
that gets into the deepfake.
Oh, absolutely.
Yikes.
It gets me also into the thought about the deepfake technology where you can make anybody say anything.
Sorry, I mean, one day Nancy's going to come home and be like, I can't believe this phone message you sent me, Patrick. And you'd be like, I didn't send any phone message.
But it's your voice.
Yep. Yeah. Yikes.
And then I'll say, well, Cyrus downloaded an app. He's just tinkering around. He's got the keys to all of my, all of the archives of my voice.
Don't forget it, brother.
You'll be the first on the list of suspects.
No, that's why I can't do any of that stuff, because
the police will be
at your
door so fast.
Knocking on my door. Yep.
Oh man. Oh man. Now there's another thing. This is not funny, but this I don't even know what to make of this, because it reminds me of, in a way, it reminds me of when I was a kid, hearing on the nightly news and my parents getting concerned about razor blades in Halloween apples, like candy apples, and other things at Halloween where there would be candy with razor blades or some such thing. And I never, ever heard of it ever actually happening. And maybe it did happen or does happen, but I never actually heard of it. It almost seems as if it might be this perennial wives' tale that gets told again and again every Halloween, as far as I know. Now, I know some industrious person is sitting down to his keyboard right now to type out an email to me, and he's going to give me all kinds of documented examples of where that happens. It's okay. I understand. But this story, for some reason, reminds me of that. And this is from TikTok, so obviously take it with a grain of salt. The New York Post has an article about a concerned dad who went on TikTok after noticing something on his daughter's car. And what it is a black zip tie. So his daughter, who is, how old is his daughter? She's a young woman. And I guess for her right to privacy, they don't give too much detail about her at all. But she works in a city, and she usually finishes work at 3 in the morning, and then she drives home. But she noticed on the handle of her car for the past 3 days running a black zip tie. And there's a picture of it in the article. It's just a little black zip tie, and it's connected to the handle where you would open the car door. And he says, I didn't know what it was. I just kept cutting it off. But he kept seeing this zip tie in the same spot. So he says, I asked her, what's the deal with the zip tie back on your passenger handle every morning? For the past 3 mornings, I've cut it off. She says, I don't know what in the world you're talking about. Because she didn't notice it. It wasn't until this father was talking with his brother, who works in law enforcement, that he realized that the zip ties could be something sinister. He says, I mentioned the zip ties, and he got extremely silent, his law enforcement brother-in-law, or brother. And he said, cut that off immediately. And here's the reason why. This is what caught my attention. Sex traffickers and people who basically steal vulnerable women will put that on a car somewhere that it's not easily noticeable. And other people who actually do the stealing know exactly what that means. According to the man's brother in law enforcement, the ties are signals to show sex traffickers or abductors that someone is alone and an easy target. It lets them know that this person is vulnerable by themselves. The dad finishes this TikTok clip. And Cyrus, if you want to post that, we normally don't post anything from TikTok, but I think this would be an exception. He finishes the clip by urging you to be on high alert. He says, if you've got teenage girls out late at night or driving, check their car every morning. Look for a black zip tie or anything that stands out and immediately remove it. And that's it. That's the whole thing. I don't know if that's real, yikes. But I sure hope it's not.
Yeah, and even if it's not, I mean, what kind of a joke is that? I don't.
You watch now. People are going to be doing that as a prank.
Yeah, not funny.
No. But, you know, the reason, because when I first read the article and I saw the video and I thought, okay, this could be like the Halloween candy thing where every year people get nervous about something that may in fact not even be happening. So taking that into account and thinking that, well, maybe this really isn't anything. But then again, I thought, well, what if it could save somebody's life? My daughter, my granddaughter, I mean, daughters, granddaughters, your daughters. What if it is something that has some ring of truth to it, and maybe they are trying to do this, and maybe by putting it out there on the radio, it could save somebody's life? I thought that was worth it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's going to go up there on the show Twitter feed at P Madrid Show. You can also find it on the show page, relevantradio.com/Patrick. Let's go to Ezra in New Mexico. Hello, Ezra.
Hi. Hi, Patrick. I have
a
question.
Okay.
Is cussing a mortal sin or a venial sin?
How old are you? Let me ask you that question first.
I'm 8.
Okay. And I will answer your question, I promise you, but I'd be curious to know, how do you understand the difference between a mortal sin and a venial sin? Do you know the difference?
Yeah, a mortal sin ruins your relationship with God, and a venial sin is still a sin, but it just ruins a tiny bit of it.
That's a good way of putting it. Another way, and you're right, of course, another way to say it is that a venial sin weakens it. It doesn't fully kill your relationship with God the way a mortal sin does. But you're right. You're right about that. So the reason I ask you is because I think that for someone like you, who, and you're young, in fact, you're what they call just above the age of reason. The age of reason is where a child becomes old enough to really begin to understand things like this. And usually that's about 7 years old. For some kids, a little younger, some kids a little older. Quite frankly, Ezra, I know some adults who haven't quite attained the age of reason yet. But in any case, and no, Cyrus, I'm not talking about anyone in my family. I've dealt with people. Maybe you have too. You wonder. So Ezra, for somebody who's older and who really understands that cussing is offensive, and you know the worst type of that would be to take God's name in vain. Don't ever do that. Don't ever cuss either, but definitely don't ever take God's name in vain. That could be a mortal sin for somebody who's old enough to really understand why that's bad. But for a younger person like you, if you are aware and you think in your mind, I know God doesn't want me to do this, and I know I shouldn't do this, and I know my mom and dad told me not to do this, but I'm going to do it anyway, I think that certainly would be a sin, but it's hard for me to know whether it would be a mortal sin for someone as young as you. Now,
and
if it's... Go ahead.
Oh, I'm going to make my first Holy Communion and my first confession soon.
I am so happy for you. I'm really happy for you. Are you excited about that? Not about me being happy for you, but I mean, are you excited about receiving your sacraments?
Yeah.
I bet you are. I remember when I made my first Holy Communion, and there's a picture here in the house somewhere, or back at my house somewhere, about what that looked like. So I can just picture, you know, that great day for you. Well, this is good that you're thinking about this, because obviously when you go to make your first confession, you'll want to think about, is there anything that I did that I should talk about to the priest? And that would be probably things like, were you obeying your mom and dad? Were you doing your chores? Telling the truth? You know, not being mean to people? Things like that. But it's going to be great.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to love it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what do you think? Oh, his line dropped. Oh, boy. Oh, well.
What a smart little caller.
Indeed. Indeed, sir. You are correct, sir.
These listeners are... A kid was 8 years old?
Yeah. I don't know why he left so quickly.
I
thought we were having a great conversation.
Off to school.
That's probably it. His mom just said, okay, that's enough. Time to go. Thanks, Mom, by the way, for letting him call. You know, when the kids call in, I know that Mom's right there, you know, helping them, coaching them. And often they do need a little bit of coaching.
Sometimes you can hear him whisper.
Tell him this.
Ask him your question.
And you know how when you're little and you don't realize that if you just nod your head while you're talking on the phone, the person on the other side can't see you?
Yeah, my kids will, well, they're older now, but they would wave.
Yeah.
they can't see you.
They can't see you. Right. And that's the thing I probably hear more frequently than anything is the mom saying, say yes.
Or say yes. Yeah. Say hello.
Just like you tell me. Go to a break.
It's not time all yet. Right. You still have a little time before you have to go to a break. So take another caller.
They can't hear us, can they? All right, here we go. Hey, let's go to Chicago now and talk to Jessica. Good morning, Jessica.
Yes, hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
I just had a question. We've been debating back and forth with my husband. I like to go to haunted houses. And he does not. So we grew up celebrating Halloween. He grew up not. And he was just telling me, you know, as a Catholic, we're not supposed to visit those places because, you know, they attract evil spirits. And to me, it's just something, you know, fun to do as a group with my cousins. So I don't know which one of us is right or which one of us is wrong.
Yeah. And Halloween, whenever it comes up, there's always a kind of a line of demarcation. Some people are on one side or the other. Not too many people, it seems to me, are kind of neutral on this issue. So I'll give you my take on this issue. Personally, I don't think it's a good idea to go to those things. Because when you think about it, let's just pause for a minute and think about what that is. So a ghost, and I do believe that there are ghosts. I think there's more than enough evidence that ghosts of some sort exist. What are they? Well, they could be a restless soul in purgatory, and for some reason God is permitting that person to manifest and perhaps ask for prayer. It could be, and probably more likely is, a damned soul, and the damned soul is manifesting by God's permission for some reason, whatever that might be, or maybe even more likely, it's a demon because they do this for a living. You know, they try as hard as they can to entangle us. So if you think about what going to a haunted house entails, it entails almost certainly something evil. Now, that doesn't mean to say that there is something evil necessarily in this haunted house, but it's a glorification of evil. It turns something that's evil into an entertainment. It turns it into something that is to give you some kind of pleasure or thrill. So I personally think that that is not, you know, it's not something Christians should do, first of all. It doesn't mean that there aren't maybe exceptions, like seeing a movie that has something like that in it. Well, that's like Bubblegum, that movie. Because that's all, you know, fun and games, ghosts. Cyrus is having fun. Stick with me, Jessica. Stick with me. So I guess what I'm saying is, personally, I would say no. I would probably side with your husband on this issue. I don't hold a view that all forms of celebrating Halloween as an innocuous, secularized holiday in the United States. I don't hold a view that that's entirely wrong. But I do think that we as Christians should be a sign of contradiction. Why, if we're followers of Jesus, if we're children of the light, if we are supposed to be focusing on what's good and true and beautiful, why would we get a thrill out of the possibility of a demon popping out from a closet or something like that? It's incongruous, it seems to me, Jessica. So personally, I would side with your husband on this one, but maybe not as emphatically as he holds this view, but I think he's in the main in the right. Now, I'll share a Bible verse with you that I think is a good thing, is certainly a good way to ponder this question that you're asking yourself. It's from Philippians chapter 4, verse 8. Finally, brethren, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is gracious, if there is any excellence, if there is anything worthy of praise, think about these things. So I've often had that verse ringing in my mind when I have thought, should I go see this movie or should I read this book or should I, you know what I'm saying? And when I think about that, I think about, well, which is going to be more beneficial to me as a person, but also which is going to be more in keeping with my claim to be a follower of Jesus. So I would offer you that for your consideration. Is a haunted house, is it honorable? Is it pure? Is it lovely? Is it gracious? Is there any excellence in it? Is there anything worthy of praise? And if you can go down that checklist, and it doesn't have to just be a haunted house, if you can go down this checklist and just say, well, nope, 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 nope. So then the question you're left with is, well, then should I really do this? You see what I mean?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. And then more because we're really trying to, I feel like we stepped away from our religion for a bit, and we're really trying to get ourselves and especially our young children closer to God. So I think lead by example, and how am I going to teach them about Jesus, but I'm doing these things that seem contradictory, especially to a young mind. Mm-hmm.
See,
so,
you
yeah,
nailed it.
Sense. Thank you so much.
You nailed it.
Yep, I saw you. It was just a different way of expressing that. And then as a wife, you tend to, no, you're not. No, I'm mm-hmm. right. With the yeah. husband.
I think your husband is exercising sound, good, fatherly, husbandly leadership. And so kudos yeah. to him. All right, Jessica.
All right.
You know what that means, right? That means I got to take a break. The show goes by so fast. Thank you, Jessica. There is room for you if you want to call 888-914-9149. If you get a busy signal, just hit redial 888-914-9149. Be right back. Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. In today's crazy world, finding companies that align with your Catholic values is a challenge. Your choice of cell phone provider matters. Cyrus and I switched to Charity Mobile, and you should too. Enjoy excellent coverage on America's most reliable network while supporting a pro-life, pro-family company. Use offer code PATRICK for a free phone. Don't miss out. Act now at charitymobile.com. This hour is sponsored by Solidarity HealthShare, the first to offer comprehensive sharing for prescription medications. Check now to see how much you can save. Go to CatholicHealthShare.com.
This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio and RelevantRadio.com.
I have two stories for you out of Turkey, and it has nothing to do with Thanksgiving, by the way. And then we'll get to your phone calls. If you want to call and be on the air with me, just call me at 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. Two good stories that have nothing to do with each other other than that they come out of Turkey. The first one, from the world of sports, Turkish soccer player Orkun Kökçü was unable to serve as captain for the Dutch club Feyenoord after he refused to wear a rainbow-colored armband to celebrate gay pride. He's 21 years old. He said, I can't do it because it would violate my Muslim faith. He has captained for this team for the past five games, as of when this article was written, but he refused to participate in the promotion of LGBTQ+++, and so that led to his removal. He says, I have decided not to wear the rainbow captain's armband of this round. He says, I do think it's important to emphasize that I have respect for everyone, regardless of religion, background, or preference. I believe that everyone is free to do whatever they want or feel. I understand very well that the importance of this action is what the importance is, but because of my religious beliefs, I do not feel that I am the right person to support this. Now, he was born in Holland. He plays for the Turkish national team. And he says that he realizes that some people will be disappointed with his decision, but he felt compelled to make it. I applaud this guy. I applaud him because even though, I mean, I don't share his religious belief, not by a long shot, nonetheless, I admire the fact that he's saying, you know, I can't go for that, as Hall & Oates would say. I don't know how you'd say that in Turkish, but I can't go for that. It's the right answer. Now, this juxtaposes with an article from this summer. This is from the National File. A Tampa Bay Rays player also refused to wear pride emblems. So it's not just over there. We have a great story from here. And I'll just read it to you from the article itself. As America's major pro sports leagues lean heavily into the LGBTQ pride stuff, a handful of Tampa Bay Rays players have refused to participate. During their Saturday game, this is back then, of course, in the summer, against the White Sox, the team's jersey contained its normal emblem on the left sleeve. Instead of the team's normal gold-colored emblem, the emblem featured the colors of the new pride flag, which includes rainbow colors and black and brown to pay homage to the BLM, and light blue and purple to pay homage to the transgender movement. The TB logo on the players' caps also contained this color scheme. So they're gaying up the uniforms left, right, and center. According to a report in the Tampa Bay Times, at least five players opted for their normal everyday logos. Relief pitcher Jason Adams was chosen by the group to speak for those players who refused to wear the Pride logos. He called his decision to opt out of the Pride logo faith-based. He says, ultimately, we all said that we want them to know that all are welcome and loved here, but when we put it on our bodies, I think a lot of guys decided that it's just a lifestyle that maybe, not that they look down on anybody or think differently, It's just that maybe we don't want to encourage it if we believe in Jesus. I think he's soft pedaling there, and I can understand the pressures that must be put upon these people. You know, bake the cake kind of thing. Wear the emblem. They realize that they could face repercussions that could be very expensive and painful. So I can understand maybe in a human way why he's being so gentle about it. But at least they did the right thing. At least they said, no, we're not going to do that. We're just not going to do it. So perhaps you in your life or as you're raising your kids in their lives, you know, you can share stories like this with them and say, comes a time in every person's life when you have to say, no, I can't do that. I won't do that. You know, I've often thought about this. What about, I mean, there are a lot of Catholic actors. I'm thinking of people like Tom Cruise, for example. He's a Scientologist now. I know that. But, you know, he started off Catholic. In fact, there was a time when he was a teenager that he thought he might want to be a priest. And I think he spent a year maybe in a Catholic high school seminary in which he was thinking about becoming a priest. But I have to stop and imagine, what would it be like? Cyrus, put yourself in this situation. What would it be like if you're faced with like a really big payday to act in a movie? You're going to get $1 million. Or, you know, these guys are probably making far more than that. But let's just say it's $1 million to act in a movie, but you have to take God's name in vain 5 times because that's what's in the script. And I see these actors who I don't know how strong their faith is, and I'm only looking at them from the outside. I don't know what's going on in their hearts and minds, but I have to wonder, at a certain point, do you just say, well, I will suspend my religious convictions because the money's just too great? And, you know, if I just say these words or if I just do this scene, then I can just not really worry about it because it's such a big payday. I'm sure that happens all the time for people like that. See? You got to get to the part, though, Cyrus. Come on. You got to start it at the right place.
Start at the right. I can't go for that.
That's where you wanted to start.
Thank you, sir.
Put a little mark. Get your pencil and put a little mark right there.
Will do.
All right. Yeah. So we'll combine that great song from Hall & Oates, I Can't Go For That, with I Won't Back Down. Not that you have to play it, Cyrus, but I Won't Back Down from Tom Petty. And there you go. That's right there. Those two slogans, I Can't Go For That and I Won't Back Down. We'll get, no, just like that. Serving up the hits here on Relevant Radio.
But of course I don't have it where he says I won't back down.
Of course you don't.
Of course I don't.
Why would anyone think you would? All right. So I'm just saying, everybody, if you get those, I don't want to say slogans, they are slogans, but if you get those principles, there you go. Get those principles in your mind. And help your kids to learn this as well, to stand up and say, no, not going to do it. Wouldn't be prudent. So if you teach your kids that, you get those principles in your mind, when those times come, those intersections in your life where you are faced with the opportunity maybe for some big benefit, but in order to get that big benefit, you've got to compromise something you know that you shouldn't do or you don't really want to do, and yet you'll say to yourself, maybe I should do it because look at the money or whatever. Just have those two principles in your mind as you go through life, and you're going to be a lot happier for it. I do believe I can't go for that. And I won't back down.
Not going to do it. Wouldn't be prudent at this juncture.
See? So there you have it. That was fun, Cyrus. 888-914-9149. Let's go now to Yoli in Anaheim, California. Hello, Yoli.
Hi. This one deacon told us, because of the way his catechism teacher taught so lovingly, that his love for Jesus grew so much. That's why today he's a deacon. Now, I want to talk about this one RCIA assistant teacher. Teaches the 18-year-old students with cussing words, and he told the students that the Ten Commandments are not of the church, and only the first three commandments are important, and the other three are whatever. They're not important. And at the end of every class, he always has something bad to say about any priest. And what's your opinion about the Ten Commandments?
Oh, come on, Yoli. You're a nice lady.
God is my witness.
No, I believe you. What I'm saying is that you're a nice lady. We've talked many times. But what, honestly, what do you think my answer is going to be about that, if you had to guess?
Well, they're God's commandments. They're all, anything that God, you know, it's important. It's extremely important.
Yeah, I agree. No, when you say, what is my opinion of the Ten Commandments, obviously, it goes without saying that we're called to follow the Ten Commandments. And what did Jesus say? He says, if anyone teaches somebody, you know, to break one of the commandments, he's got a big problem. I'm paraphrasing, of course. That's the Patrick Madrid translation. No, so Jesus is really clear about that, that we are called to follow the moral precepts in the Ten Commandments. And he says that if you teach somebody not to do that, that's a sin. So, I mean, it's a shame that there are people out there in positions of responsibility who are saying something contrary to what Jesus said, but, you know, you can admonish them. You can write a letter. You can bring it up to the priest or the bishop. I mean, you have the right to take action if you see something like that. So, I mean, if you have or have not done those things, that's always an option for you. But ultimately, you know, life's too short. I mean, if you're in a position, let's say you're a mother of a child who's in that CCD program, and somebody who's teaching the program spouts off with nonsense like that, you have every right to stand up and say, that's not true, that's not right, and complain to the pastor. You have that right. Now, if it's just something you're aware of and you realize it's going on and you want to bring it to the pastor's attention, that's fine too. I mean, I'm not suggesting otherwise. But ultimately, life's so short, why fret and fume and worry about it if it's not something that you can directly control?
Well, the way I feel, because I have, in the past, I have taught catechism. And when I taught catechism, I looked at the children, and you don't know which of the children, you know, they're going to take it a step further, who's going to become a priest, a nun, or a saint.
Right.
And I feel like, I strongly feel like he's robbing these innocent children that really are there to learn and love Jesus. And I really think, I mean, this man is evil. I mean, you don't.
Well, then, if this is true, Yoli, if this is true, I have no idea if he is or not, but what he's doing, it certainly sounds like he's doing something egregious. So take action. First of all, you can admonish him personally. And Jesus talked about this in Matthew chapter 18. You know, if you have something against your brother, go to him in private, see if you can work it out. If that doesn't work, then bring two or three witnesses. If that doesn't work, he says, then tell it to the church. And if he won't listen even to the church, then treat him as a Gentile or a tax collector. That's Jesus's prescription for what we call subsidiarity, starting at the most local level and then ratcheted up, escalated up, only if it doesn't work at the lowest level. So if you admonish him and he's like, ha, 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 you've got no power over me. You're not the boss of me, Yoli. So then maybe you take it up with the priest, document it in a letter, see what happens. And then, you know, if need be, bump it up the food chain to the bishop. You certainly have the right to do that. And I do agree with you that if you see something, say something. If it's something that needs to be corrected for the sake of these young children, you do have an obligation to do something if you can. But once you've done everything you can do, this is the point I was trying to get at earlier. Once you've done everything you can do, and if it's unsolved and you no longer have any power to do anything about it, what I'm saying is don't obsess over it, or don't stew over that, knowing that you've done everything you can and you've made a good faith effort. You know, if it's causing you that much anxiety, then like I've told other people before, if it's just so crazy at a given parish, go to a different parish after you've done everything you can to try to help.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Okay, you just gave me an idea, because I know that giving one a blessed medal with a crucifix is very, it's a miraculous blessed medal with a crucifix is very powerful. Excuse me, I'm a little hoarse this morning.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Patrick. I knew somehow I'd find the answer with you.
Oh, you're welcome. And you know, I really like your idea there of giving a gift to somebody, somebody that you might see as an opponent, somebody who's doing something wrong, and it really irks you, and try to find a way to win that person over, I think that's a really good idea. Really good. Anyway, thank you, Yoli. Let me know how that turns out. When we return, I'll go back to your phone calls. I also want to share with you a true story that just occurred to me along the same lines as what Yoli just said a second ago about maybe giving the person a gift of a crucifix or a miraculous medal or something like that, almost like a peace offering, and let God work in that situation. I have a true story I want to share with you about just that on the other side of this quick timeout. So please stay right there. My number is 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. I'll be right back. I'll give a little bit, I'll give a little bit of my love to you. There's so much. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio Line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
Patrick Madrid is on Coast to Coast on Relevant Radio.
Hey, welcome back. Hope you're enjoying a wonderful Taco Tuesday. We do it in Mexico all the time. Hey, Cyrus, I bet I know what you're having for lunch.
Take a guess.
You're going to have a tuna fish sandwich. I'm going to have a taco. I'm going to have a taco, man. Okay, I want to share this really cool story with you. It is, I'm just going to read it to you. And it's from one of my books called Life Lessons. And they're all true stories, every chapter. It's called Life Lessons, 50 Things I Learned in My First 50 Years. And it's just 50 short little vignettes of things that happened to me or happened somewhere near me. So here goes. And think about this in light of what Yoli was talking about before the break, about somebody who's really irksome to her at the parish doing something that's objectively wrong, misleading the kids that are being taught. And so she said, I have an idea. I'm going to give that person a gift, like a crucifix or maybe a miraculous medal. So with that in mind, here goes. One of my wife's friends, Dee, confided in her recently about a workplace situation that caused her a lot of aggravation. It seems Dee's coworker, Jennifer, a married Catholic woman in her 30s, was constantly rude to her, abrasive, judgmental, and chronically contentious. Jennifer made Dee's life miserable, so much so that she eventually quit that job where she had worked for years just to get away from her. I've got to get you out of my life, is what Dee would think each time she saw this woman. It didn't help that Jennifer clashed with Dee on Catholic issues, too. She didn't see the need to go to Mass every Sunday, and various other aspects of the church also seemed optional to her. Comments like these drove Dee crazy. What's more, Jennifer was seen as a kind of poster girl of success, socially and financially. She came from a prosperous and well-known local Catholic family. Her sister, who also was consistently rude to Dee, was considered one of the pillars of the local Catholic community. She and her husband and kids were widely regarded as model Catholics, and their family as a model Catholic family, all of them popular, successful, and very active in parish life. To complicate matters, Jennifer also happened to be a member of the parish choir that Dee played piano for, so she couldn't entirely distance herself from the aggravating attitude and comments. Eventually, she couldn't take dealing with this woman in that context anymore, so she resigned from the choir. Sharing these frustrations with her husband, Jim, Dee said she described how toxic the situation had become and how she was at her wit's end as to how to deal with it. I didn't want to quit the choir over this, she said in exasperation, but I couldn't imagine having to be around this woman any longer. Just being in her presence makes me miserable. Jim works full-time in law enforcement and has a small but thriving woodworking business on the side. The main thing he makes is crucifixes, large handcrafted wooden crosses with the body of Jesus affixed. One evening, as Dee was relating the latest irritating run-in she had with her former coworker, Jim gently interrupted to suggest that she give Jennifer one of his crucifixes. Impossible, Dee laughed. First, there's no way she'd accept anything like that from me, and of all people, me. And second, I don't even like her. I can't stand her. I don't want to be around her. Why would I give her a gift? Jim explained that during a recent CCD class he was teaching at the parish, the decision had turned to a list of evil forces that can divide families. When alcoholism came up, one of the students, Jennifer's 16-year-old niece, spoke up emphatically saying, "Yes, it sure can. I know exactly what you mean about that." That's when it clicked in Jim's mind that alcoholism might be part of the problem underlying all the drama and stress that surrounded his wife's interactions with Jennifer. "That's why I think they need a crucifix, Dee," he said. "Fine," she retorted. "You give it to her. I want nothing to do with it." This struggle over whether or not to give the crucifix went on for a few weeks. Jim persisted and eventually wore Dee down. "I've been praying about this a lot," he told her. "I really feel convinced that God is telling me that she needs a crucifix." "Then you give it to her." "No," he countered. "I'm not sure why, but I feel certain that God wants you to do it." So, being a good-hearted person, Dee swallowed her pride and acquiesced. That following Sunday after Mass, she approached Jennifer's sister apprehensively, having no clue how she might react and worried that she would blow up and this would become another fiasco, maybe even worse than the ones before. She hoped that she'd be able to just give her the crucifix and she would pass it on to Jennifer. "Hey, I'd like to give you something if you don't mind," Dee said nervously. Eyes wide, the woman tensed up as if sensing a confrontation. "Give me something? What?" Dee handed her a large package. "This. Jim and I think your sister should have it. Would you mind giving it to her for me?" "What is it?" the woman said, still tense and clearly nervous. "Go ahead and open it," Dee said. "I hope you like it." Hesitating for a moment, the woman guardedly accepted the package from Dee's outstretched hands and began to remove the wrapping paper and open the box and saw inside a large crucifix. And she started to cry uncontrollably. Sitting down on a nearby chair, she clutched the cross to her chest and sobbed quietly, her head down. Just then, Jennifer, for whom Dee really intended the gift, noticed the commotion and stepped over to see what was happening. Glancing down, she saw the crucifix in her sister's arms, and she too collapsed into tears, kneeling next to her sister, her arms around her as they both sat there weeping for what to Dee seemed like a long time, even if it was only for a minute. "How did you know we needed this?" Jennifer asked Dee plaintively as she wiped away her tears. "How could you know? I always thought you hated me. I can hardly believe that you would give me a gift like this," she said as her tears began to flow again. "You have no idea what a difficult and painful time I've been having, our family has been having. I've been feeling so alone and scared, and you..." And she just trailed off. "Jim and I wanted you to have this," Dee said quietly, shocked by the transformation, "because we realized that something was wrong and you must be hurting, and we just wanted you to know that Jesus loves you and can help you and your family through whatever it is that's challenging you right now." And then the most amazing thing happened. All the anger and acrimony between the two of them simply evaporated. It suddenly vanished, and a kind of friendship began to grow where before there was only thorns and broken glass. Truly a miracle of God's healing grace. I don't know if the ways in which God is working in Jennifer's life and in that of her family, I don't know what those ways are, nor does Dee, but she has seen with her own eyes the power of the cross of Christ, the power that is so strong and so deep that even the most stubborn animosities and divisions are unable to withstand it. It is the power of love, God's love. When Dee first told me this story, this is my little addendum at the end of the chapter. When Dee first told me the story, I thought of the words of the famous Simon and Garfunkel song, "Bridge Over Troubled Water," which I think perfectly summarizes the lesson here, how Jesus Christ will heal and help us if you only let him. And here are some of those lyrics. "When you're weary, feeling small, when tears are in your eyes, I will dry them all. I am on your side. When times get rough and friends just can't be found, like a bridge over troubled water, I will lay me down. Like a bridge over troubled water, I will lay me down. When you're down and out, when you're on the street, when evening falls so hard, I will comfort you. I will take your part. When darkness comes and pain is all around, like a bridge over troubled water, I will lay me down. Like a bridge over troubled water, I will lay me down." And I finish with a quote from St. Paul in Galatians 6, verses 1 through 2. "Brethren, if a man is overtaken in any trespass, you who are spiritual should restore him in a spirit of gentleness. Look to yourself, lest you too be tempted. Bear one another's burdens, and so you will fulfill the law of Christ." And that chapter is called The Crucifix. 888-914-9149. That's the number to call to be on the air. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Joyce now in Sacramento. Good morning, Joyce.
Good morning. Patrick, can you tell me if there's any avenue for a young person to be baptized a Catholic without going through the catechism?
Yes. I mean, baptism normally involves a time of preparation, a catechumenate, as is technically known. And most parishes, well, really all parishes, would have what's called an RCIA program. So the church prefers, outside of some unusual circumstance, that ideally the person go through the RCIA program and prepare. Usually that can take up to a year. It doesn't have to take that long, but that's pretty typical. But the prudential judgment of the parish priest, if he says, well, under these circumstances, I'll be happy to give instructions and we can shorten the time down, you know, make it a matter of a few months if necessary. And keep in mind that the church has certain thresholds that the person who's going to be baptized goes through. So they're among the elect, they're catechumens, they have certain official things that are liturgical in nature that they pass through on their way to being fully received into the church. So ideally, that's what should happen so that the person is properly prepared. Now, in cases like, you know, war or some natural disaster that's looming or danger of death or anything like that, baptism can be given without all of those things. But ideally, this young person you're talking about, Joyce, should have that kind of preparation, and the parish priest could make that determination.
That is good to know. I understand the need for the preparation. She is a lovely young woman. I think her schedule is such that she doesn't really have the time, but I don't know that for sure. But so long as there's a way, I can at least ask her to speak with her priest.
Yeah, I think that's the best way to go about it, because he will be dialed in and know exactly what to do.
Good. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you, Joyce. 888-914-9149. Let's go now to Melissa in Cleveland, Ohio, that is. Good morning, Melissa. Welcome.
Good morning, Patrick. I just wanted to tie back to what you were talking about a little earlier about choosing to wear pride colors or logos and people making that choice not to as a faith believer. So I'm seeing that a lot with pronouns in secular business, in their email signatures, in LinkedIn profiles. I go to a lot of corporate events around the country, name badges. Of course, I refuse to as a Catholic, and as a Catholic business owner, I would never do it. But I just wondered your thoughts on that and how we can encourage others that are out there working in the secular world.
Yeah, you know, it's funny that you mentioned this, Melissa, because I was thinking about this very issue just this morning as I was doing my show prep. And I was thinking about how insulated I am from all of that. I'm insulated from it. I don't work in an office environment where people are doing that. I work in an office environment where everybody at Relevant Radio is, you know, has their head screwed on straight, and they don't deal with that silliness. I don't have kids in school anymore. My kids are all grown up. Their kids are in school. So I don't have to deal with crazy school systems or curricula. And even just in general, I find that I'm not a spectator so much as I am. I'm just not affected by that in any personal way. So what I was thinking to myself this morning was, what would I do if I were in a situation like what you're talking about, where colleagues are putting their pronouns in their email signatures and other things like that? What would I do? And I tell myself that I would do what you just said, and that is I respectfully decline to participate in that. I don't believe in that, and I'm not going to do that. And I think that's really the only way you can navigate through this, because little by little, if you... And you know this, Melissa. I guess I'm just speaking generally to everybody. But as you know, if you give an inch, they'll take a mile. And before you know it, you're compromising and compromising and compromising. And then you've been completely absorbed into it. Even if you don't hold those views yourself, you have been completely conquered. And they have now subjugated you. And you're now doing what they want you to do because they overwhelmed you. So we shouldn't let them do that in the first place. We have to resist it from the very first step and never stop. Otherwise, they will overwhelm you, you know?
Yeah, that's a really important one. You said never compromise. I mean, we can't compromise with our faith. That's what's so important for people out there in the business world to remember.
Yeah, that's true. Now, we should be uncompromising. That's true. We also have to be loving and compassionate.
Of course.
And like Jesus, you know, meeting people where they're at and seeking to show them that peaceful, compassionate face. But at the same time, Jesus did overturn the money changers' tables in the temple and whip them with cords. You know, he had certain red lines over which people couldn't cross. And so it's not that we have to be stern or angry, but persistent.
I think it says a lot just by not having it. You know, my husband works in a corporation where he just doesn't do it. So I think that says a lot just right there. Just, I'm not going to participate in that due to my, and he doesn't, no one's asked him why he hasn't participated.
Yeah. But they will eventually.
On who he is.
They'll get around to him.
Catholic. Yeah.
They'll get around to him in due time. Well, you know, one thing, and thanks for the call, Melissa. One thing too, and I don't like to block people on social media, and really the only social media I'm really on to any great extent would be Twitter, to some extent on Facebook too, and I guess a little bit on Instagram. But when I see people who are promoting that, or even in their profiles, they have the stupid pronouns and stuff like that, very often I will block them because it's a preemptive kind of thing. It's like, I don't even want to have any kind of a dust up with you. So the easiest thing for you and for me is if we never have to cross paths. Therefore, click the block button. So I do preemptively block people who have never interacted with me, not because, you know, I have anything against them, but when I see how they act online, when I see what they're saying and posting and commenting on, and I think, I really don't want that in my life. So if I preemptively block you, chances are you'll never know it. You'll never even know who I am. But if suddenly you discover, oh, wait, why am I blocked? It could be for something like that. There we go. Hey, bridge over troubled water. Thank you. Don't forget, we have a special novena running from November the 2nd through the 10th to pray for the holy souls. And we would like to pray for your deceased loved ones. Please go to relevantradio.com/souls and tell us the names of the people you'd like us to pray for. I'll be right back.